No.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's my pleasure to introduce Nick Anderson, who will be presenting today. Nick is a graduate of both Evergreen Community College, the Oregon
State College.
OHSU Informatics program, where he got his master's, and our program, where he got his PhD in informatics. And he has a longstanding interest in policies, procedures, ways to facilitate researchers' use of data, and currently is focusing on interinstitutional data sharing, the CICTR project, and I'll let him delve into detail about that.
Sounds good, thanks. And I think I know almost everyone here, and most of you have seen some version of this. So this is a year into the project now. So CICTR, by the way, is Cross-Institutional Clinical Translational Research, and the full name of the project is the I2B2 CICTR project. But as you can see, it's helpful to summarize that. So today I'm just going to quickly talk, I'm going to overview the scope of the project as we originally defined it, the technical environments, and really kind of more the meat that's making this all happen at the technical level, and then some of the challenges and next steps that we're facing as we try to pilot a information exchange environment. So this is a two-year pilot project that was affiliated with some of the first round of CTSA supplement grants to CTSAs around the country. Our ITHS is the second cohort, and through a variety of reasons, the wisdom of the NCIR said they would like to stimulate certain projects to kind of compensate for some of the budget cuts that everyone assumed. This one is one of three. The other ones are at Red Cap, out of Vanderbilt, and out of Case Western. And they're all trying to address different problems in developing information exchange environments. The other two are more focused on clinical trial management at Vanderbilt and on sleep studies at Case Western, but they all have different approaches to federated data sharing and processes, policy, and technology. My project that I'm the nominal PI of is a coordination between UW, IPHS, UC San Francisco, Clinical Translational Science Institute, and UC Davis CTSC, and also we have kind of a silent partner of Harvard. I have a subcontractor called named Recombinant Data Systems out of Boston, which is providing a lot of the technical staging and tooling, and they work closely with Harvard as well, so it's been a quite good collaboration. So if you don't know much about I2B2, specifically about the software, the other driving biological projects, please do visit the website. So the goals are to foster data-driven research collaborations, and this is essentially based on how you develop and test generalizability of anonymized data sharing in federated querying environments across geographically distributed and somewhat competitive academic institutional medical systems. Also evaluate the impact of these systems and the processes of making these systems available on different classes of end users, as well as the impact on the institutions, and to pilot governance approaches that supports and protects both the patients, the researchers, and the institutions. So as a driving use case that grounds what we were really trying to do here, we made the following initial statement, which was how would you use anonymized data across multiple institutions to understand whether or not there's sufficient power to represent potential patient recruiting for your clinical study? There's been a long and sordid history of clinical trials not being able to get sufficient power in recruitment, and some studies are shut down. And so this is one way that we're thinking, using purely anonymized data, you'd be able to identify whether or not there is sufficient patients available. So how many patients in the UW medical system, as a local query, might be at risk for diabetes? Well, if we are only using structured data and it's anonymized, you don't have a great deal to go on. But the following case would begin to identify those who are of the correct age, have already diagnosed with obesity, have other abnormal glucose, but do not already have diabetes mellitus. So we did this. We've run this against local data. We've also run this against UCSF and UCD data. And this is something that I think shows what you could never do without other formal survey methods or other estimates. And so this system now can provide these sort of queries, and this is one simple example, but I'll go into why this is constraining as well. So mainly, how can this kind of query be passed against external clinical populations? How do you align what is represented and made available at different institutions to make a common query that has high quality? how can we increase sensitivity and specificity of the numbers that are returned from this? What additional data can we bring in that we can govern? And how can these results, which in some cases are just numbers or even blurred numbers, be effectively used in translational research? These are ongoing themes, and these basically parallel and underlie our entire project. So the general challenge is multi-institutional use cases and users that uses anonymized cohort discovery. We are initially focusing on aggregate counts as well as providing institutional source. Presently, it is just these counts. In the future, at least locally, we hope to have local HIPAA de-identified limited data sets with additional approvals. And we also want to add more rich metadata about what exactly is involved in the data sources at these institutions. Right now, we will note that you're coming back from UCSF, UCD, or UW, but we won't say that how the range of patient data, how many years. We won't say what level of curation we've accomplished. We won't say what level of mapping or what approaches to mapping we've had. So right now, we have very high-level discovery capabilities, but there's a great deal more we could provide that would be very helpful in coaxing confidence of the quality of this data. So our users presently are clinical translational investigators or study teams who are trying to do these estimates of whether or not there's sufficient power. Informaticians, because there's a lot of really knotty problems here. Terminologists, for the same reason. And hopefully, ultimately, because public health researchers do use anonymized data in different ways, we'd like to extend this to a kind of a public health research environment. So we, throughout this project, we have four parallel processes which are trying to combine and coordinate these different challenges. We have, of course, critical is the technical IT development, implementation, and testing group. The governance group, which is trying to work on data use agreements as well as interpreting what IRBs mean locally for anonymized data and the ongoing evolution of that. The ontology, terminologies, and semantic alignment group. And then the evaluation group, the impact on the end users, how these tools and the processes meet with their end user needs. So this is to actually name names of the type of roles, informaticians, ETL analysts, terminology, software architects, usability, evaluation, informatics, and IT stuff. Well, these are all paid off the grant, though in very small amounts. And down below, we have what is really makes this critical to actually have any success at all, which is we have fairly high support at all three institutions, as well as Harvard. And we're now increasingly getting clinicians who are interested in assisting in the use of this. As an informatician, I can think of nothing more exciting than be able to look at a system, look at a query across multiple systems and get aggregate counts back. Much to my surprise, this was not exactly what was meant by all clinicians out there. They need to be more, they need different levels of involvement, but we are now getting that. We'll talk about that in a bit. So to touch on the technical environments, there are now compatible server architectures and different database environments at each institution. The I2B2 sites are relatively identically configured. Common ETL anonymization processes to meet with our local IRBs. Common development environments. We use Jira and other things to manage bugs and other issues. Common knowledge environment. We have Wiki that manages everything together there. And we have a common understanding of what we're really getting ourselves into by providing access to these systems. So I guess it's broadly similar common governance processes. So from the top, I2B2 is the Informatics of Integrating Biology in the Bedside. It's National Center for Biomedical Computing funded center. Now it's in the sixth year out of Harvard. And it grew out of the RPDR system with a lot of publications on. And it's generally a collaboration of Harvard Partners Health System and Mass Gen Hospital. It has, I think, seven biological cores, only of which one is software. And the biological cores are driving biological problems that are much more focused than distributed federated data querying, more in the bioinformatics realm. But the one core, the software, has really been producing really remarkable work. Right now, it's deployed, in some cases in full production, in some cases in pilot production, at 29 institutions worldwide. And these can be very, very large scale. Cincinnati Children's is using it for their main IDR, as is UCSF. Technically, it's implemented as web services. You can run it against Oracle, SQL Server, Sybase, or PostgreSQL. It's a Java LAMP environment, and it's in 1.3, and 1.4 is coming out this month. and it's under GPL license. IGBT is also going for the renewal, and their next focus will probably be natural language processing and other extensions for visualization and other secondary data analyses. So it's implemented as a set of web services with both server-side and client-side components. Mostly these run on the server, and these these .blue 3 are the core critical Hive components necessary to get the system running locally. This doesn't reflect the federated architecture we'll talk about in a minute, but what sits on top of this is a workbench, which is visual, which allows for interface with any of these as may be desired, and the entire architecture is very plug-in capable. So this is this is actually, I think, the Eclipse client. Also, there's a web client. This is a kind of the main home of any user perspective on how to use IGBTU. So on the left, you have a collection of facts or terms, and this one has been searched for obesity out of a larger taxonomy. You can explode these, and then by combining various terms from the left hand into the query generator on the right, which includes just basic Boolean logic and exclusions, as well as some query by value, depending on what institution you're at, you can run a query, and it will return it in a set of captured queries on the left there, and of course your execution and kind of debug status on the right. In the web client, this has series of plugin modules, statistical analyses, other breakdowns, visualization components, heat maps. You can plug in as you need it. For anonymized data discovery, we're really after mainly just the numbers, the source, some sort of provenance, and then hopefully some idea of how to contact the people behind those repositories to make further queries if you wanted to then rerun these queries in an identifiable manner locally. So this is downloadable. You can get a VM. You can play with this to your heart's content. And you can build it. And you can deploy it fairly easily against an Oracle 9i database that comes with it. We have this in production now, as well as development environments at all three sites. When we originally wrote the grant, we said that we would define the federated query approaches to sharing data across these three sites. Well, it turned out that Harvard was already on top of this, and because of prior work with the Shared Pathology Information Network and others, they had been developing in parallel a thing called Shrine, which is the Shared Health Research Information Network environment. What Shrine does is allow you to bulk together multiple IGBT2 instances through a common central aggregator, which can broadcast queries and then marshal them back to the original source IGBT2 implementation. So the interface looks exactly the same, but instead of running against one IGBT2, you wind up running against multiple. And since these queries are sent out simultaneously, the latency is the slowest of those queries. There's not any other staging. There's a lot of tweaks and tweaks that people have done to maintain further anonymity by holding some of those queries so it makes it look like everything comes back simultaneously to hide the identity of institutions. We're not doing that right now. So what's interesting about Shrine is that it's been built to hopefully be able to integrate with CA Big Networks as well, though apart from some limited stuff at UCSF and some discussions, this is yet to become to true fruition. Sean Murphy at Harvard is the person behind most of this, with Andy McMorrow at Children's Boston MIT doing their project direction. So if you look at how we are now set up for a aggregate network, you can see on the left, every site has a project management cell, which basically reflects the workbench. Every site has a query composer. Every site has a broadcaster aggregator, a responder aggregator, and a local clinical research chat, CSC, on the right. So when you go to marshal a query, the UW would certify a user, compose it, broadcast it. Each individual responder would verify the user against their local authentication database, send that to their CRC, respond it back to the aggregator, which would then bring it back into an aggregator result display results to the user. So this is functional now, both at Harvard and on the West Coast. Harvard is using it in cautious production mode. On the West Coast, we are still essentially a research project. What's underlying this is some fairly sophisticated network security environments. We have demilitarized zones, which are represented as the green here, where we have essentially, to the best of our ability, provided if you hack any one of these, you can't get anywhere else, and getting into any one of these will be tricky in the first place. So this is based on UCSF having a very high level of hack attempts, and they pushed the necessity for such a security environment, and basically we necessarily had to deploy the entire environment in the same framework. We have VPN access into any of the systems because a recom does so much configuration work. We can basically cut a system off, and Shrine will cut systems off very, very quickly if there are any perceived discrepancies in authentication and things like that. So far, we've deployed secure environments with real data at four sites, which is three West Coast partners and Harvard, though Harvard we are only deploying against their test databases. We're approaching 2.5 million de-identified patient records, and this will increase across the three-site secure network. And as of today, we're able to simultaneously query on demographics and disease diagnoses, anonymized demographics, represented as ICD-9, across all three systems. This has spawned a lot of secondary research that is managed week to week. One, of course, is the usability of these systems. How can you integrate these into the translational workflow? Where is their true utility? Another is, can we improve on the way anonymized data is presented to the user or the end user to support greater trust and utility? And a third is really standards development. The only way to do this work has been to try to figure out what standards we can best merge on and align behind, or we wind up creating yet another standard, as the old joke goes. So in phase three, which started a few months ago, we are trying to move beyond our basic data levels of just demographics and disease diagnosis to medications and laboratory values. We have, over the last of phase two and phase three, focused on diabetes and cardiovascular disease because of the complexities of determining medication sets appropriate to one of these disease domains. Diabetes, we've generated a set of lists that is both reflects clinical trials in diabetes that are of interest, as well as common diabetes medications that most patients who have diagnosis of ICD-9 250.star are also on. Our ultimate goal here is to be able to use the addition of things like medications to create more poorly characterized, to identify more poorly characterized patients with more poorly characterized diseases. The ultimate goal originally was to say, okay, we know we can find out patients who may have prediabetes in the Seattle area, but how can we find out patients who may have some subtle and more unique conditions? How can we do this in a way that is both safe to the patient, that still leverages the ability to do this in broad networks? So that's what we're trying to work towards here, as to support investigators who are trying to recruit patients that are otherwise hard to find in local areas. So as of today, we presently have the following data elements for querying: age, gender, race, ethnicity, geocode, vital status, marital status. We're not presently mapping language or religion, but we're working towards that. In diagnoses, we have date of diagnoses, ICD-9 numeric code, supplemental classifications, and of health status, and classifications of external injuries and poisoning. I want to point out that age is obfuscated to the year of birth, so there is no clear age, and so we drop, we manually drop off any actual date and just link it back to the year of birth. Data diagnoses are obfuscated by plus or minus 21 days, random number, but they're consistent within a patient record. So even though we are blurring the date of service, we're keeping them consistent. So there is some possibility for more temporal studies. As we move on to medications, we are basically focusing on date of encounter, again obfuscated, medication name, and dose form. And when we get to labs, we'll be focusing on date of lab and lab values, with the hopeful goal of being able to query by lab value, by value itself, as opposed to just presence or absence overlap. So our main challenges and next steps, because this project is distributed, lightly funded, and very exciting, but we constantly have challenges to try to build up our simple goal of rich characterization of patients. The first we're facing right now is the definition and evaluation of complex methodologies that supports things like medications and laboratory values, where there are not one-to-one values, one-to-one mappings, and there are a lot of complexities that is causing a lot of concern around the country. We're also very interested in evaluating what the quality of these mappings results in. So we make some choices locally. We do this at three institutions. We provide an interface to a large set of data. How do we determine that that actually meets the type of mental model and usability of an endocrinologist who's looking at diabetes research? And we're going to try to approach this both qualitatively by measuring pre and post mappings and quantity and numbers of different types of data that we're doing, as well as qualitatively by evaluating exactly how queries are formed and managed by researchers interested in cohort discovery. And finally, and last but not least, we are trying to determine how to actually make these systems available for researchers to use them themselves. Since we are under different IRBs, right now our IRB states that we are technically, the data is technically exempt from human subjects protection because it is completely HIPAA de-identified. There are a lot of concerns about what that really means when you start taking this to the very large network level. So the complex mapping challenges is pretty much what keeps me awake at night. How we got to where we are is that we first had to see what was the lowest common denominator of standards-based representation of information that we could make available at each site, and then develop a set of mapping methods against those. That put us where we are today. But what we're doing to improve on that is building or adapting tools that can support the federated environment that have some knowledge of the expectations of what I2B2 really does. And we're trying to really find out what it would mean to take some of these mapping approaches and normalize them to make them less labor intensive. It takes quite a bit of time to build ETL mappings out of original data sources into I2B2, say nothing of organizing and managing the anonymization and testing that and so forth. So these are the three things that are essentially linked as we move into our last year of this project. So what's been really interesting to me is that there's been a great deal of discussions and national dialogues on how to develop standards projects. And a great deal of these have been lacking in any really tangible, practical project that is trying to hit on this every day. So we've had a lot of support by NIH and the various other HITSB and other environments out there. And this has allowed us to really begin to vet where things are going as we move towards data sharing. Data sharing is a very, very big area these days. So what we are trying to do on the left here is that, you know, as terminology, we are trying to work, help assist in having practical information of how terminology suppliers, standards development, national standards policies affect terminologies, data information models, obfuscation, anonymization, legal regulatory policy, how that affects us, and how that goes back and feeds these other two environments. This is our beehive, our bee model. And so Davira Gabriel, the terminologist at Davis, has been instrumental in working with some of these and is now being asked to interact at various government levels, mainly because of our ability to demonstrate the very local and tiny challenges we're facing. So what we've chosen so far is, these are some of the factors that came into our selections. In addition to just being less common denominator, we are going with what HITSB is recommending, what the Shrimp Harvard ontology taxonomy has wound up being in 2009. This was kind of an organically developed taxonomy that was appropriate to Harvard and partners' environment. That's as far as they went. The common data availability. Again, we have, you know, we have common diagnoses and ICD-9, even though David at UCSF, they had to do some shenanigans to get that working. And we have widespread use of HL7 demographic value set. So these are the things that informed our first two data sources. And so just as a quick example to link it back, HL7, OMB, ISO, this is just gives you a version of what makes up a standard for demographics, essentially, down to, of course, religion. And then the common discussions, diagnosis, and the next two. We've agreed to focus on RxNorm as our target terminology for medications through strong encouragement by our NIH sponsor. Though we have come up against problems with that, particularly with the case of multiple ingredients mapping across different formularies. But we're basing on the ingredient table. And we're focusing on length, though we have some issues there we're going to have to address. So But because we have multi-site and ability to respond, we've been informing and having collective discussions about a lot of different things, particularly things like RxNorm, when it's going to get to experimental drugs, if at all, if it's going to address multi-ingredient routes. We responded to the HITSB EHR CTMS value use case back in June, but it has limitations. It only works with single institutional data sharing environments. We are looking at the IHE redaction service functional profile about what could inform sharing of health data for patients and others. We have been asked to, through our colleague at University of Florida, to look at the HL7 CSE diabetes domain analysis model. And we're really, again, what really is the measure at the end of the day is how useful this is to the end users, who we are presently focusing on as PI study coordinators as we move into the next level of evaluation. So here's where we are in mapping this. I keep trying to explain this as a philosophical challenge. Harvard is very good at what they do, and they developed a taxonomy that really supports Harvard's needs. And that was organically grown, like much software in academics has grown, and it is constantly evolving, and it isn't likely that it's ever going to completely firm up on any particular terminology, because terminologies tend to evolve. So our first option for doing more complex mapping is just to get everyone to agree on the same target reference terminology and then conform to this and to figure out a process to do that. So this has worked for us for ICD-9 in most cases, and Harvard developed a tool that sort of met their philosophy, which is called SHRIMP, or it's the Shrine Mapping Program, I think, is what it really stands for, which is in very early pre-alpha release right now. But we see some challenges to that. One is that by addressing what one monolithic institution provides as a taxonomy, we can lose information as we make these transitions to that common taxonomy. The simple case is that that we went through is that race ethnicity at the UW can be split into race and ethnicity codes. At Harvard, they're using the CDC model, which has 200 and some different levels of race ethnicity. But for all three of our institutions to align with that, we had to go to our lowest common denominator mapping, which essentially combined race and ethnicity into one table, losing out a large number of different characterizations. Now, if we're talking about this might be okay in small clinical trials, but when we're representing 2.5 million people, we will probably wind up losing a lot of people if we follow those routes. So Harvard took the right route, but it's very sparsely populated, and we're trying to find out how to really, address some of these questions of quality to best support what is the distilled lowest common denominator across the sites. And of course, what our biggest challenge is that what if our local needs require change to common targets? How do we mediate sharing terminologies across multiple sites if it grows beyond three? Do we lobby for Harvard to change it, or do we have some other democratic process, or do we stop sharing? So option two that has come around is sort of an effort that has been led out of UCSF, is to use a public terminology repository, such as the OpenMDR out of Ohio, build local maps against public maps that are stored in there, and then check these in and out by services that are necessary to, on a query-by-query basis, need to understand how to map across multiple environments. Now, this sounds actually pretty elegant, and it's nice because it uses some of the existing CA grid world, things like LexGrid. If one wished to, that's what MDR is mostly focused on. And it would provide a bridge to some grid environments in terms of just terminology sharing. We have a tool out of UCSF, as I said, called Ontomapper, now known as the Health Ontology Mapper, or HOM, that is doing this at a very basic level for a project that Ida Sim, a colleague of Jim and Peter's, is down there at UCSF. But there isn't much content in these open terminology servers yet, nor is anyone really racing to jump on board, because it requires... Again, a significant philosophical shift. Most importantly right now is that Shrine is agnostic of this, doesn't know how to do it, though we have some approaches that we're trying to, that could be done if we took this route completely. in integrating with Shrine. Right now, Shrine does not consider the options of sharing terminologies around it after or prior to making a query. So option three, the one that we're heading towards, is to try to blend, test, deploy, and then test both of these environments, to leverage what we can with the existing tools out of Harvard, because I2B2 and Shrimp and Shrine have been developed about a fairly good representative taxonomy, but then to integrate onto Mapper to address more the complex medication mapping and testing and evaluation approaches and things like lab values. This ideally would let the site decide. Some sites which only may share demographics and disease diagnoses would not need to collaborate in an open MDR or terminology sharing environment. And some sites which perhaps are only doing local work or community work that is completely out of, does not overlap with the Harvard taxonomy, would be able to completely use an automapper approach or working with CABIG. So this, of course, will require additional Shrine I2B2 configuration development. And so what we're discussing actually today is what is the gaps between what we have for the Shrimp tool, the HOM tool, our environment, and other configurations to identify what we can do with Recom over the next few months to test this out. Since our major motivating goal of this project is to actually share information and not do ontology work, this is sort of a necessary approach that we have to evaluate to be able to say why we're going to do what we're doing. And so it's a good opportunity, I think, to understand where the barriers are, both on use and outcomes of this sort of data. So probably in about 2 months, we'll know the outcomes of those results. So we also, as I mentioned earlier, I think as well, we also have concerns that the choices we've made in mapping may not reflect globally or intuitively how researchers create structured queries. Endocrinologists who are limited purely to anonymized demographics and disease diagnoses may not understand those limitations. And so we're trying to understand what are the barriers to them productively using such a system. So Davis is going to be doing some focused evaluations of this over the next few months. I'm trying to recruit some endocrinologists here at the UW, and if anyone knows anybody, please let me know, that we're going to invite in and basically bribe with food to get some feedback on where their barriers to the mental model. And the access to researchers is a really big challenge. We at each site, there's a very different integrated data repository environment. At UCSF, they're using I2B2 and Davis as their full-scale IDR. But the IDR is identifiable data that is different from what we're using here as an extract of anonymized data. They have some processes in place. Making this process in place, interinstitutional, raises red flags for everybody. Ideally, we'd put the researcher in front of the query tool and let them generate, prune, play with our add in plugins to their heart's content. We would do this with some business rules that allows that they are fully responsible for their use. We haven't quite figured out quite how to facilitate this. Even though we are under IRB approval of being completely exempt, and they even told me not to ever approach them again to ask them to add users to the IRB, we are taking the cautious route, and we are going to indeed ask them for permission before we do this. It is very sensitive, and sensitive for things like business intelligence, being able to compare between large data sets across hospitals, issues of who's responsible for the quality, etc. So this is where I think the real rubber meets the road in terms of how to deploy large-scale systems. Who do you provide access to, how do you manage it, and how do you ensure that you are at least to the level of what you can control, providing the best quality of data? So the project is kind of a never-ending cycle of semantic challenges, technical challenges, governance challenges, and evaluation challenges. And so it's kind of a fascinating informatics Pandora's box to me. If we're successful, we suddenly provided a system that you can do competitive intelligence of how hospitals operate at a very high level. If we set the wrong expectations through that, we might freak a lot of people out. We don't want to create unnecessary branches of code because a lot of work's going on. With 29 institutions around the world doing this, a lot of people are focusing on different problems, on automated ETL, on different levels of NLP processes, visualization, and other things. We don't want to build a new tool if there's other things out there, and we don't want to build a new process or another burden to what is already a fairly complex environment. So we want to, you know, our choices are, you know, integrate, for example, integrate with CA Grid. It's not why not. It's like when, like now or in 2 years, because I think these things are very important to consider, and they're very exciting, but we have very limited resources, very regular milestones, and so we must maintain the scope of control. And fundamentally, what we really are trying to do here is trying to make a system that makes available information, discover information about patients, but we need to protect the patients. We also need to protect ourselves and the partners, and we need to protect the developers, people like me and John and Peter, from this project being a career killer. So that's the things we're watching out for. So I want to quickly acknowledge that this is a large effort, even though no one on here can be ever thought of being more than, I think, about 20%. John Gennari is working with me on terminology. Fred Wolf is on the evaluation. Peter's in governance. Justin Cross is my system in. My RA, Lishma Parmichelano, is a former RA, did a lot of evaluation work. Amashin Porowitz has done some rotation with John and I. And the rest, you can see, it kind of spans a lot of different people across a lot of different sites. We have a kind of a regular guidance from NCRR to make sure we're on the right track. So that's the state of the project this year. Anybody got any questions? Yes.
So when you're talking about the security and the API access to that, and sort of wanting to refine it at the same time, spread at the same time, I'm just wondering that in my previous life, I did a lot of Android math. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that kind of approach where you have data center security instead of sort of data warehouse security with a bunch of, I don't know your whole setup, but I assume it's more or less open data that's got a big wall around it.
Yeah, I mean, it's anonymized data with a big wall around it. Yeah, exactly.
But versus where the security and the access rights are, in effect, baked into the data itself.
You know, that's...
That may buy you some
flexibility. Fascinating idea. I think that would apply, you know, to a lot more to, like, say, biospecimen data sharing, where you can bake it into that. This, since you know, our biggest challenge is that we've stripped this data down to almost nothing. We're down to very limited data considered compared to what you'd get in an IDR. I mean, and we're still at risk of being identifiable here. We're baked HIPAA into everything that we do. I think right now the data structure definitely, unfortunately, doesn't support that. I think it's a really interesting idea. I think what we are going to try to do instead, or along those lines, is see if we can work towards business processes that support domain-focused queries. So you start talking about, instead of saying, okay, we'll give you access to everything, we'll give you more access to a little bit, and we'll never give you access to everything. And that, of course, may go against the usability of the researchers. But, you know, we'll say, okay, endocrinologists, we'll give you more information about endocrinology because of this, that, and the other thing. It'll allow us to have richer information. It'll allow us to be able to test the expectations better. And it'll allow, you know, we'd start sharing maps just about diabetes, you know, that would be our richer focus. But yeah, I mean, I like the idea of digital rights management, something like that. I think about 20 years ahead of this process right now. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you the extent to which you work with the School of Public Health Information or Health Informatics Health Information Management IIM program, because the people there have been intimately involved for years with defining the common model for the electronic health record that captures individual health data that is the source of the population health data that you have been discussing. And those have to be carefully synchronized if you're really going to get data flow.
Well, yeah, we have not worked with them directly, but we're working with their people through the HITSB stuff and the other EHR standards development. You know, our CTSA, I think perhaps a bit of a lack in most CTSAs, doesn't really have a clear public health component informatics in it, at least not that I'm aware of. And this one, when we created it, was, you know, it sounded like a cautious project when we started, let's just say. But I think that is exactly the direction we want to go, is we want to understand that, some of that experience, and use that to build up best practice approaches to working in broader scales.
Well, I would just say that is a extremely valuable local resource to get you at where you really need to be and where the nation is trying to get at, but has been wandering blind and ignorant in the desert, so to speak, for at least 20 years.
Absolutely. I wrote an R01 that involved them, actually, recently. We'll see if it was just kind of along those lines that for that reason. That opportunity is very, I think, clear. And at Harvard, Boston Children's, they are closely tied to the health informatics program. And that's where Shrine came from. But it hasn't seemed to extend to their taxonomies yet, which is a different group. So this coordination is still evolving there. Yeah. Jim?
Could you give a more specific example of the problem of mapping between terminologies? So, I mean, you know, what's different the way we do it at UW versus UCSF? And given that, a little bit more about how this mapping works? You know,
so the on there's two things. First, none of our individual ordered formularies have a native export of RxNorm, though I believe that's available. But for someone humble like us who is trying to ask how to build mappings through the clinical systems, we must ask carefully and then pretty much do those mappings ourselves. We were strongly suggested to move towards RxNorm because of the sponsorship from NLM, which sounds fine to me, but we do not, if we take a look at our 100 data, 100 medications we've identified as a canonical set that will hopefully test the primary critical path and edge cases of this, 20 or so of them are complex that only exist in certain unique local forms that are going to be very difficult to discover. One simple answer to how we might do this is that we would just map the medications within a complex medication, which would mean that if you would query on a patient with a complex medication, you might wind up with multiple entries as a different ingredient component of drug at the other end. So the outcome will be more than, it won't reflect reality exactly for the fact they're on one medication. They would affect, they'd be on multiple medications, just because of the way we'd represent and reflect it. We would like to find a way that we can actually accurately translate between a complex medication form here at the UW and UC Davis without loss of presentation and without any additional data added into the, any noise added into the system. And so doing this right now, if we're just going on the normalized name, if we're going on the normalized name, we are finding conflicts of unique dose forms at different institutions, and you know they're there, but we have to figure out how to map them. And you know, I know that recently Harvard wrote a grand opportunity grant to try to focus just on medications, and they were going to sink something like two times this project's entire resources into just medication mapping because they feel there is easily a loss of quality and resolution if you don't figure out a way to really map the medications and the dose forms all in a common way. So right now, Health Ontology Mapper is basically an engine that sits low down and allows maps that can have multiple relationships instead of associating you they have one-to-one mappings, one-to-many mappings, and archetype selecting mappings, all of which can allow us to hopefully do kind of breaking down of a medication into ingredients, mapping ingredients, then reforming it back into a drug on the other end. That's what we're hoping on, but we're still trying to test this. And we're doing this in a very humble little way. And we're doing this only because we needed to scope down to something to get something done. And it's a real good thing we did, because the more you scope this down, the problems still continue to enlarge. And I don't know as much about Health Ontology Mapper, I think, as anyone except for Rob Winden, who we can get on the phone. In 2 weeks, we're going to have a combined view of what we would be able to get if we combined the HOM mapper, the SHRMP mapper, and these approaches to support that very use case. And then hopefully it'll be easier to talk about.
Sorry, just one last question, which was enlightening to me the degree to which people were freaking out at the various institutions or the various causes here. I think it might help just group here a couple as examples. Oh.
Sure. Well, the big one is just, of course, the business intelligence. Is that
we could very easily now, even with just demographics and anonymized demographics and disease diagnoses, determine the incidence of diabetes at UW is much higher than at UCSF and Davis. And these are kind of like, you know, Palin-esque publishable sound bites that wouldn't go well for everyone. Now, not to say that's not the question, but that's just one example. The other thing is that with aggregate data, we presently do not think that there is much danger of rediscovery, particularly because the way that Harvard is baked in the anonymization approach, very advanced method, is that they'll return an aggregate count and then add or minus plus or minus 3 to it on a random basis, and they'll scale it a little bit. Well, you know, that won't cause any re-identification things, but it really doesn't kind of get to what we're trying to do. So we're trying to find out, you know, where is the real risk as opposed to the perceived risk of sharing aggregate anonymized data. Because right now, the real risk is mostly, I think, based on concern that it could be bad versus it being based on true evaluation of what has happened. Now, on de-identified data, we all know you can computationally re-identify almost anything. But on what we're doing, there's not a lot of traction on the ground yet of what you really can do. So we're trying to test, and one of the projects working on with John over the next few months, is trying to test if there is some quantifiable data we can say about where the relative utility of presenting aggregate data is. But I think overall, these systems of this nature have not been available for trust reasons for a long time. At its heart, probably, is that there's some concern that people's privacy will be violated and they'll be excluded from insurance. Maybe that'll go away in 10 years. Just by posing a demonstration project of how to do this, we've learned a great deal about institutional concerns, challenges for both representing accurately and also for consequences of rendering invisible patients through the anonymization process that cause ethical concerns. I mean, there's some people out there, I think, who would probably say that what we're doing does a great disservice to anyone who lives in a rural zip code, because we're making them, we're zeroing them out, basically. You know, so depending on who you ask for, there's different challenges, different concerns on this. But I think the big one, which is unmanaged yet, is how to get a researcher in using a system and to sort of get a commitment from them that they're not going to go publish the data on Yahoo Buzz tomorrow if they found out that there's 50% more diabetes patients untreated than UW. Got to go, right?
Thanks very much. Sure. The one thing I wanted to say, Nick, was is that the example that has caused more alarm is not only the diabetics, it's the number of surgical complications, the number of lung infections, the number of preventable iatrogenic or possibly diseased problems. Thanks very much, Nick.
Sure thing.
Evaluation.